This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
We are going to talk about two films that are celebrating their 25th anniversary. One we talked about briefly on our Google Hangout only episode, Would You Like to Know More? But we didn't talk about it too much, so we're kind of revisiting it. We have some new people to talk about this film, and it's going to be Total Recall. And then we're also going to talk about Darkman. And I think we're going to talk about Darkman first.
Yay!
Darkman, yes. Directed written, at least the story was written by one Mr. Sam Raimi. Yes, the man who went on to do major big-budgeted superhero films. And here we basically have a brilliant scientist, played by Liam Neeson, who is left for dead, and he returns to exact revenge on people who burned him alive. And I mean burned him alive. Dude gets tore up. and this scientist, he's got some superpowers thanks to not being able to feel pain. And it's Liam Neeson, so he's kicking ass. Young Liam Neeson, but nonetheless. And this, I believe, was Sam Raimi's first big-budget feature film. The previous film I think he did was only in the 100,000s, and here we've got $16 million was the budget for this one. Let's start with Glenn. Your thoughts with Darkman when you first saw it?
I loved it when I first saw it. Mm-hmm. I was already a Sam Raimi fan before this.
Sure.
So seeing him getting a shot for the big screen, plus, I mean, the cast, I didn't know. I mean, I had known like that Bruce Campbell had been who Raimi wanted for the lead role, but the studios would not go for that.
Right.
But Frances McDormand I liked a lot already. Mm-hmm. The fact that she was in that kind of also drew me in. So I'm like, okay, cool. It's Sam Raimi. I will definitely see this. And it was a hoot.
It definitely is a lot of fun. And what I love about it is that this film has Raimi written all over it. Andrew, what about you? Your thoughts, your initial thoughts after you saw Darkman?
Oh, man. Well, I was stoked as hell. I was 13 years old, and I was a big Evil Dead 2 fan. And I was just the ad campaign was, who is Darkman, you know, and this is like the year after Batman. So they're trying to make like an original superhero. I had like the Marvel adaptation. I had the novelization. I was ready. I'm so ready, man. Because, you know, I mean, it's a children's movie, really. And I ate it up. And I happen to have to have my journal from when I was 13, when I first started writing about movies in the summer of 1990, and I got young Andrew's brief thoughts on Darkman, if you
Ooh,
guys
let's, mind. Yes, yes, enlighten, let's...
Thanks, Lorraine, that's a good early 90s reference you just made.
Thank you.
It's September 2nd, 1990. I spent an hour or two at Walmart waiting for my dad to get some pants. Then we went to see what I considered to be the best summer movie of all time, Darkman. It was great, and get this, my mom even liked it. There you go.
Wow. Wow, nice.
Apparently my mom liked it. She did not like Total Recall, which we'll talk about later. but no, Sam Raimi, he's like, you know, he someday he's going to really be – I mean, it's – He makes kids' movies. Army of Darkness is a children's movie. Darkman's a children's movie. They happen to be rated R. I don't know who did that, but it was a mistake. Because, you know, and I saw it 5 times in the theater, dude. 5 times.
Darkman?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
Darkman.
Wow. Yeah.
I think I saw it twice in the theater. And Paul, what about you, sir? Your initial feelings with Darkman?
I did not watch it in the theater when it first came out. I actually watched it first on a video cassette. But it does have a lot of the Sam Raimi style and a lot of his isms.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the characters back then. And now, rewatching it 25 years, well, probably less than 25 years, but truly, I appreciate the greatness of this movie more now as an adult because there's so many little nuances that I missed when I was younger that I appreciate now. And also watching a lot more movies since then has really helped me appreciate this movie so much more.
Definitely. And Cole, what about you, sir? How are your thoughts on Darkman?
Well, when I first saw it, I saw it about a year after I'd first seen Bruce Campbell speak at a Fangoria Weekend of Horrors, and it was shortly before Army of Darkness came out, or maybe a year or two before Army of Darkness came out, and apparently at the time, Army of Darkness was going to be called Dead Meat. I'm just quoting Bruce Campbell here, and they were aiming for a PG rating, neither of which happened, but he didn't want to talk about Army of Darkness too much. He seemed agitated to talk about it. But somebody brought up Darkman, and he talked about Darkman for probably 15 minutes, at least 10 minutes. But he talked about, and this is before I'd seen it, he talked about all the stuff that had been cut out and about how, you know, test audiences can ruin a movie and how a lot of the wilder sequences apparently involving the villains. I haven't researched this online. I'm just going by what he said over 20 years ago. A lot of the wilder stuff involving the villains was lopped out by the studio and test audiences. So by the time I watched it on VHS, I kind of had a bitter taste in my mouth. And in hindsight, looking back on it, what he wasn't ranting about was Darkman. He was ranting about what was happening with Army of Darkness, which is they'd eventually cut like 15 minutes out of the movie and make them shoot a new ending. So, you know, and I've talked with Bruce a few times since. I'm not just throwing names around. My stepmom used to work for Fox. So when he was promoting Briscoe County Jr., he'd swing through and I'd talk with him. But he really, he had a lot to say about Darkman at the time. And I was never able to watch it just because I knew all that stuff had been taken out. But having watched it literally right before I came on tonight, fuck, man, this is an amazing. I mean, I'd never seen an A1 in widescreen, B2 with my surround system, and C3 since I'd started making movies. I think I'm blown away. I'll just leave it at that for now. But
sure.
This one's amazing. Yes. Amazing.
And Don, how about you, Darkman?
It, you know, I did not see it in the theater. I saw it on video later on. I liked it. I've seen it a few times, but I guess it did not leave as big an impression on me. Mm-hmm. Even though I did enjoy it, it just it wasn't one of those movies that really impacted me all that much.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, and that's why I love this room so much. Everybody has varying opinions, but I can definitely see that with it, you know, even if you are a Raimi fan. So,
which I am.
Which you are definitely. So, and Scott, what about you, sir? Darkman.
My story is very similar to Andrew's. Mm-hmm. I had just, when I, you know, was reading the Premiere magazine, you know, about the movies that were going to come out in the summer. And, you know, it was, that was, this is one of their little, like, things where they just barely gave a paragraph to talk that, oh, yeah, and there's this movie called Darkman. It was, but I was like immediately like, boom, cause I saw Sam Raimi's name and I had just discovered the first two Evil Dead films at that point. And I was like, oh my God. Ah, I got to see this movie. And so I was like, you know, every single thing I was looking for any kind of clues I could. The poster came out, the teaser poster that just said, who is Darkman? And, you know, the A in Darkman, the second A or whatever, first A, one of them, was the trench-coated figure. And I was like, oh my God, who is Darkman? Holy shit, I need to see this. And, you know, and then I'm like, kept getting trailer after trailer after trailer after trailer, and I'm like, when's this movie coming out? It came out like the last weekend of summer, I believe. And I was like, oh my God, when's it coming out? And finally the trailer came out. I'm like, oh my God! It was like on the beginning of like some I can't even remember the movie. It was on the beginning of one of the MCA Universal movies. But I like played that constantly. I was bringing in all my friends. I was bringing in my parents. Parents, look at that. I'm like, oh, my God. Is that what you're looking at? Do you worship the devil? Like, no, blood. It's like I was just so into it. And then I like begged. I mean, they had to listen to me all summer long because unlike some of your other cool neighborhoods, it was so freaking hard to get into an R-rated movie if you did not have an older person with you, and none of my parents or anything were going to see Darkman with me. And my brother was not that cool. So I'm like, I gotta somehow find somebody at the theater who's going to let me and my friend see this movie, even though we are 14 years old or whatever. And so finally it comes out. I'm like, I'm right there. I'm with my friend. I'm like, okay, we're going to see this movie. Okay, remember, you got to shut up in the movie theater. Otherwise, some usher is going to come in and say, hey, you're kids, and throw us out. And, you know, it was like, we saw this movie. Ah, I was going nuts. I loved this movie so much. It was my favorite movie this summer. I think it was my favorite movie of the year at that point. Every single, paper I did in school – For the first 3 or 4 months, I was trying in the middle when I would finish the thing, if I finished it ahead of time and you're supposed to sit there with your paper on your desk, I was trying to draw the little trench coat figure in the corner of the paper, see if I could get all the lines and contours right. I mean, I was nuts for Darkman, and I still am. I love, love, love this movie.
And that's awesome. And for me, Darkman struck a chord because I was still coming off the high of Batman. Big Burton fan. Here we had Batman. I'm just a huge fan of Batman. I went gonzo for Batman. I mean, and so here we are a year later with a Darkman, and it's an R-rated superhero film. It's like, oh my God, now we did just have Batman. Now we've got this. And it's done by Sam Raimi, who, again, I knew him from the Evil Dead series from watching those horror films. And so I was like, oh, I'm behind this. And then for me, Danny Elfman doing the music, okay, I'm there. Because I'm just a huge Danny Elfman fan. And especially after the Batman soundtrack came out, it was like I looked for everything of his. Before that I didn't really pay too close attention outside of if it was a Williams or a Horner, rest in peace. If it wasn't one of the bigger names, I didn't quite notice it. But after Batman, I recognized Danny Elfman, and all of a sudden it was like I found out he had done music for some of my other favorite films, like Beetlejuice, and I'm like, oh, my God. But this one, yeah, I saw it. I'm like, oh, it's a mature superhero film, and I really enjoyed it, too. I thought it was weird and different, but at the same time, I was really digging it. Just for the uniqueness at the time that it was, because it is a superhero film. And I read something interesting that apparently this got spawned because Raimi had the idea, but he tried initially to get into Batman. Raimi tried to do Batman, and he couldn't get attached to the project. So he had Darkman. He had this story about Darkman that he decided to make, and they let him and gave him lots and lots and lots of money for it. And it made its profit back, too. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about, it was mentioned here, the cast. We do have a very interesting cast. Frances McDormand's name has already been mentioned. I thought she was actually really fantastic in it. But Liam Neeson as our Darkman. It was really weird not seeing a young Liam Neeson. Seeing a young Liam Neeson try to restrain his very familiar voice. did anybody else notice that? Paul, did you notice the voice seemed a bit different on our Mr. Liam Neeson than what we're used to? And I don't think it was just because of age.
No, I think it had to do a lot with him trying to make sure his teeth didn't fall out.
Well, no, but I mean, before that, even when he was just the scientist, it seemed like he was trying to suppress his accent. It was weird.
Well, I think this was his first action type film, so I think he was just kind of discovering that voice that we all know him for.
Sure,
I don't know. I think maybe he was trying to kind of play down his accent a little bit, because I'm sure that there were, like, Universal people saying that, and he was, like, worried about, like, a Universal exec saying, maybe we can dub him, you know? but he'd been in, like, supporting roles in action films before. I mean, I didn't know who he was when the movie came out. Mm-hmm. When he got cast as in Schindler's List a few years later, everyone's like, hey, who's this unknown? I'm like, unknown, that's motherfucking Darkman. Sorry, man, you're going to have to bleep this episode a lot, man. Sorry.
Oh, no worries about
it. I think maybe he was just trying to play it down a bit, but I don't think he was. I don't think he was really doing it too much. What I got from his voice actually wasn't so much in a tense turn to like play down his voice as much. It was to kind of. I actually, and I was going to get into this later, was to recall the like Colin Clive and people from the old Universal monster movies. Because even before he becomes the monster, he kind of talks to himself and is very animated in the science lab and everything mm-hmm. like that. And I felt like it was kind of a direct throwback to the old Universal monster movies of the 30s and 40s.
Which is actually a good point, because, again, I read up on this, and apparently Sam Raimi wanted to do a monster yeah. film in the vein of this. Did I read that right? Anyone else?
He had written a short story that was an homage to the Universal horror films.
Right.
And the movie grew out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, see, even I didn't even know that. I just kind of figured it from the way he was like acting and stuff, and like then later, of course, later on when that you actually get into the actual like more monstrous aspects of Darkman and stuff.
He's got the wraps on him, like the Invisible Man, reminded me mm-hmm. a bit of good old you know,
I saw Invisible Man, Phantom of the Opera. Going a little mm-hmm. further beyond Universal, I saw the original House. Well, not the original, but the Vincent Price version of House of Wax.
Sure.
You know, I saw a bit of that and all that stuff there.
Yeah, there were a lot of influences in there. Don, what'd you think of the superhero himself, the character, the casting of Liam and his design? Anything about that that you remember about or that you liked?
Oh, I liked the character. Mm-hmm. It's just like I said, I'm sorry. Like Scott said, it was very reminiscent of familiar classic monsters.
Sure.
And Liam Neeson is extremely charismatic, so it was very easy and believable. And Sam Raimi is an excellent writer. So I definitely liked the character.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, and again, too, the whole world was still coming off of the Batman high from the previous year. So, and this does have some, you know, it's a darker character. He's got a great trench coat. Cole, what'd you think of the design of Darkman and Liam as the Darkman in this?
Well, it's for sure coming off the Batman high. I mean, If you look at the editing and staging of the final sequence, there are shots that are,
mm-hmm.
you know, pretty damn close to the very final shots of Batman. And stylistically, there all throughout the movie there are extreme similarities. But Batman was playing off of Blade Runner also. So, the design as a whole was amazing, I think. Again, just watching it tonight, I hadn't seen it in a long time, and it all really worked for me. The trench coat and the practical explosions and the humor. And, man, the death scene of the hero, well, the degradation of the hero. I guess they don't exactly kill him, but we used to really destroy people back in the day. This is Jesus, Peter Weller and RoboCop and even Eric Draven. I mean, we used to just butcher the hell out of our heroes. It's the pretty heroes. Stuff. But Liam Neeson is great in this, and the whole cast is great. The character of Darkman is fantastic. It was so nice to just rewatch this and be impressed with everything. You know, all of the sort of disdain I'd had for maybe some stuff, of which I'll probably never see being cut. Sure. You just got to let go of that as a viewer and realize, holy shit, you know, this is this film probably inspired a lot of what became of my favorite movie, which is The Crow, which I hadn't thought about until just a couple hours ago. You know, how much Darkman has influenced not only The Crow, but Blade and so many movies. What a great flick. And, oh, man, probably the best action scene of 1990, really, with all those multiple explosions as he's trying to escape them and then ends up off the hook. All that stuff is great.
On the helicopter, yeah. We'll get into some of the action scenes and humor in a minute. But Andrew, what about you, sir, with Liam as this role? I mean, it was, while he had supporting roles before in some action films, this is kind of the first time we've seen him in something like this. What'd you think of his performance in him and the character of Darkman?
I liked him, man. You know, like, I'd seen him in High Spirits. Remember, he's like, oh, God, what have I done? So I keep saying that over and over again. Like, that I liked High Spirits. Like,
he said Bahogies quite a bit in that movie.
Yeah, I liked him. No, it was cool because for once, he wasn't one of the guys that's usually an action hero, you know? He was like, at least somebody new that we didn't have expectations from. Because when we talk about Total Recall, we're going to have to talk about the fact that, you know, Schwarzenegger, what? He can kick ass? Oh, I wasn't expecting that. You know? It's like Jack Nicholson going insane in a hotel. No, really? I'm falling out the chair just thinking about it. Shit. So, like, that was really, really great, too, because he has a vulnerability in him, you know what I mean? Like, he seems sad. Like, Darkman seems sad because he was sitting there thinking, like, oh, God, the people are going to think this is racist, the name of this movie, because I get burnt up and I'm called Darkman. You know, he had a lot of weight on his shoulders for a production like that. So, yeah, I was very, very impressed with him. And you always feel bad for him. He's a tragic hero. And it is more of a monster than superhero, you know. It's like kind of, oh, God, what's like something else is kind of like that. You know, Hulk kind of teeters on monster movie and superhero like that too, but Darkman is, I bought it hook, line, sinker. I felt for that guy. Yeah. I could relate to him.
It was like he took if the Phantom of the Opera decided to do revenge other than just in the opera, like he decided to be a vigilante. It was like Phantom of the Opera vigilante. You can see all the influences in here. And I like Liam in it. You know, he is a surprise casting, but he really... And not just him, but the entire cast. Something like this.
Oh, God, dude. Hold on. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just had this thought. You know how Darkman, like, you can't really see his mouth move too good? Yeah. You know, in a lot of those scenes where he, like, kills somebody or, like, does somebody in or creates a elaborate thing that causes the bad guy to die? You'd be a great video to overdub Darkman's things that he says, you know, like when you know what I'm saying, when he puts the hook and destroys the helicopter, you could have somebody just dub in just like, you know, eat a bag of dicks in hell. To make an actual worth the R rating, you know. Sorry, man, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just had that thought.
No, that, like, that's okay,
friends here and I can
but then I think
eat every dick in hell.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. No, it's okay. But it wasn't just Liam.
I think everybody, what helped make this film work is, we do mention the humor, because you do have Raimi's humor in here. I mean, you get this kind of serious action scene, you know, and then he adds some of his humor. But even with the humor and the type of superhero this was in that, did it feel like everyone involved was totally behind this? I mean, in the sense that everybody put in their full effort. It wasn't just, this is, you know, Sam Raimi, an indie film guy. Oh, you look at the script. Everybody took this material, I thought, very seriously, didn't you think? That, you know, because you can usually tell sometimes when they aren't taking it too seriously, but this one, it felt like everybody just went all in with it, if that makes any sense at all. I hope it does. Otherwise, I'm just rambling.
No, you just didn't ask anyone specific, so we're all just sitting
here. I was getting there.
Are you going to call on me?
Glenn, do you think everybody actually went all in on this? I mean, because you know what it's like. You can tell when sometimes a cast isn't behind a film.
No. I think they were definitely all in on this. I mean, Neeson talked about, this was a long time ago, talked about how he liked the challenge of this role. Because, I mean, he spent, it was like 16 to 18 hours a day in all that makeup.
Yeah.
Sure.
Wow. And a big reason why you don't see his mouth move much is because he worked very hard in trying to not let, because he had to wear false teeth, and he worked very hard trying to not let them move. Because that would obviously, if the teeth are moving around in his mouth, it's not going to look right. But yeah, and I mean, it's also interesting just the number of people that were considered and almost cast for a lot of these roles too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only reason Neeson got this role is because Bill Paxton told him about it, and then Paxton got pissed because Neeson got the role because Paxton wanted it. I mean, it almost ruined their friendship.
Sure.
So. But yeah, I mean, I think everyone, from what I've read, I read stuff years ago on this when I was doing just a bunch of movie stuff on my old blog, and everyone seemed to just really kind of be into it and really enjoy it. I know Danny Elfman loved working on the film, apparently, because he loved Raimi's visual style.
Right.
And it fit well with his music.
Yeah, it does. I think outside of Tim Burton, Raimi's probably one of the best fits for Elfman's style of music.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack does play a rather impressive part, actually, in this film.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because Elfman had done the soundtrack, to Batman, this big, huge film, and then he's doing the soundtrack to this. That's why I love composers, because composers, it's not really the budget of the film. They'll just do anything just for a chance to do different music, I think. and Elfman's music definitely plays but with everybody all in, you see Raimi's style in here. Scott, wouldn't you say this is definitely signature Raimi, from the montages to the action scenes?
Absolutely, and I loved that about this movie is that It was, like everything is people have said so far, it was a superhero movie. It was a brooding piece. And as I was talking about before, it is like the old monster things, but it is totally Sam Raimi. And, as I'd mentioned on earlier podcasts that we've done, I used to show like movies to like the kids from the parochial schools and everything.
Yep, you were that kid that corrupted the other kids.
Yeah, and that's who I took to this thing. This one kid from the parochial school, and I had shown him, and one of the movies I always showed people was Evil Dead 2. I thought, yeah, and if they really like it, then I'll show them the first one, but show them Evil Dead 2 because no one can get bored during Evil Dead 2. So he says, oh, that guy? Yeah, sure. But he didn't know what to expect because he's like, oh, I don't think I've seen any kind of movie like this before. Oh, gosh. And, he's in the theater there. And we're watching the movie, and he's like whispering to me, this part's funny. Is it supposed to be funny? I'm like, yeah. And then later on, this is really sad. Is it supposed to be sad? Yeah. that's the great thing is that you had and all the weird camera angles and the montage and where they would show his anger manifest itself. You'd see, like, the circus thing, crackle and light up, and then you'd see, like, fireballs out of nowhere. Because what the fuck? Throw a fireball in there! And, it's just, I loved that he showed his style. I mean, this is why when everybody was on, like, Pins and Needles, back when it was, I think it was, like, what was it, 2002 when his first Spider-Man movie came out?
Yeah.
Oh, is it going to be good? Is it going to be good? I hadn't. People who saw this movie didn't have a doubt in their mind. Like, no, this is going to be good, guys. This is going to be really good. Because he's one of those people where the only person who can rein in Sam Raimi is Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
And the only times where he has done a movie that has been more reserved is when he has consciously said, I'm going to do a movie that's a little more reserved. It's going to be a bit more psychological than in your face. And so you have films that are still good. Simple Plan, For Love of the Game, sure. The Gift, you know. But, you know, he's one of those great visionaries. And this was like him, his first big studio film, you know, his first multi-million dollar film. And it was even considered low budget by studio standards, but man, this was a guy who had something to prove, and I think he just went all in, boom, let's do it, and it works. It is total Raimi.
I no time felt like he sacrificed anything in his style in this film. Wouldn't you say, Don, you're a big Raimi fan, wouldn't you say, this is like, he had to be so giddy, because he pretty much made his style of film, but with a lot more money.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You definitely saw that he got to play with things that he had just barely touched on with his earlier work. And he was surprisingly conservative with it, because he had a lot of fun with it, and that's obvious. Like Scott had mentioned, the visuals with the crackling and the carnival scene and some of his other things. But with a bigger budget, he was still more conservative than he could have been, because he still, like, he was trying to take this serious and be a serious...
This was his shot. He was trying.
His shot. He wanted to make it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it definitely has his signature stuff. For me personally,
I do want to mention something that I thought of as Scott was talking about the Spider-Man thing. Mm-hmm. I kind of drew some parallels with Frances McDormand's character, Julie. Number one, she's pretty much the only female character in the movie, which may be part of the reason that I had a little trouble with it. But she was kind of the Mary Jane. Mm-hmm. Her whole purpose was to have the bad guy get her in a situation that she needed to be saved from.
Yeah, I did notice that as well, that it was that her character pretty much was the damsel.
But she wasn't weak. It wasn't that she was weak. Not at all.
No.
She was a strong character, but her purpose was not strong.
Well, the
purpose wasn't strong.
It was to be the obsession of the main character, because he's, you know, wants to marry her in the beginning, and then he obsesses over her after he gets hurt and tries to get back together, and of course when she's put in danger, then she's the person to save. And also, you know, she's the it's her memo that gets the whole thing in trouble. So she is, you know, she is a focal point of the thing. But she doesn't get to actively participate in the plot. She is merely a placeholder in the plot. And actually, I was watching the Blu-ray, the Shout Factory Blu-ray, and on the commentary track that I started to listen to, Bill Pope says that Frances McDormand did not want to do the film. Is that she was a last-minute replacement, and she said because they were all friends, you know, the Coen people and the Raimi people were all friends, and she didn't want to do the film. She was a last-minute replacement, and it's not that she was unknown. She had just gotten off an Oscar nomination for Mississippi Burning.
Mm-hmm.
She basically agreed to do the film. And they all were talking about how good she did, but she honestly didn't really want to do it. It was a last-minute replacement for somebody else. I don't know who. According to IMDb trivia, Julia Roberts was up for this part.
Whoa.
And then backed out to do Pretty Woman. I don't know if that's true or not, though, because you can kind of have to take some of those trivia things with a grain of salt. So,
Until
I hear somebody confirm that, I'm like, nah. But she was a last-minute replacement for somebody. I know that.
And we also get a great villain in here, played by Larry Drake. And I want to talk about the villain for a minute, because he was definitely kind of your basic organized crime guy, but he had a little bit of a few quirks to him. Cole, what did you think of Larry Drake's Robert Durant?
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love that performance. And I especially love when he's playing opposite himself, when Darkman is under his skin. And we get a couple of those shots where Larry Drake is acting opposite Larry Drake. But I also want to mention again, you know, a lot of Larry Drake scenes were cut. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many or to what extent. Apparently there was a scene where he was dancing naked on a bed.
Around oh, man. Again, that's not a fun, right?
I am, all I am doing is quoting what I heard Bruce Campbell say. That's all I am doing. This does not come from the internet. This comes from very fond memories of myself. But I tend to believe it, because you can kind of see it in the film that there might have been more manic shit there with his character. But I'm going to leave that aside and just say the way it is on screen in the finished film is amazing. Larry Drake is great. That opening scene with the wooden leg that is the machine gun is fantastic. And the entrance of the villains into Darkman's lab is fucking amazing. I mean, that scene is really good stuff. And then when they kill his assistant, that shot of Liam Neeson and Liam Neeson's emotions, I mean, all that stuff is so good. And then the blast that sends him just flying outward. Oh, man. With an amazing... I'm sorry, Mark. What did you just ask me about?
It was about Larry Drake's character.
Phenomenal. He got killed off too soon, I thought, even though his death scene is spectacular.
You can watch part two if you want more of him.
Mm-hmm.
Was he in two?
He was in part two. I think Jeff Fahey was in part three.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I love the opening with the cigar cutter, and all that stuff is so morbid and creepy and good.
You can tell it does lead more towards a more twisted bad guy, though. I mean, he does have the collection of fingers, which he cut off with a cigar cutter.
Yeah.
Which that was just brutal. giving him that. You know, his shtick, if you will. So I can totally see a scene where he would be dancing around naked on a bed. I could definitely see that.
With all the fingers up his butt.
Like a peacock.
Well, we went there, folks. All right.
Well, you know, Larry Drake, I mean, let's remember now, I know that I'm probably like one of the few here who has not seen that Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Right.
Which is like a classic TV movie that he was in. But he was known primarily at the time of this movie, he was known primarily for playing a mentally impaired character on L.A. Law. And if you see that, you know, that character, you know, he plays it, you know, with, you know, it's very, a lot of compassion and everything and really good. And they... You know, apparently Sam didn't even see that, you know, but he cast him in this role. And Larry Drake, I remember interviews at the time, he just relished it. He said, because I was as bad as they would let me be. He was this great, you know, mob kingpin enforcer character with an obvious military background.
Yeah.
You know, which is how I think he got the whole trophy idea. You know, you can see him, like, collecting that, like, in, you know, wherever. And it's just, you know, and he just let him be as they just let him be as bad as he wanted to be, and he was, you know, fantastic in that role as Durant, you know.
And he actually was in the unaired TV pilot they tried to push 2 years later.
Yeah, I have that somewhere around here, burned to a DVD, and I never have watched it.
So. Yeah, that didn't go over very well. But you can tell Larry Drake, and he go on later on to play Mr. Dr. Giggles. Which
Dr. Giggles.
Is, oh, vomit, fuck.
Maybe we'll have to do a podcast sometimes on Dr. Giggles just to get that reaction again.
Oh, yeah, I'll be on that podcast if we could schedule it for the 5th of Neverwary.
Nice. But Larry Drake definitely makes an interesting character. He's a good villain to opposite our Dark Man because he's even more twisted. Paul, what did you think of Larry Drake?
I've always thought he was a scary man ever since the Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. he played this role fantastically. I really do like the idea that they gave him something that you can remember his character with. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite lines in this film comes from him, where he basically says, "I have 7 more points."
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Amazing. Amazing line.
Oh, that scene was great. He cuts off the 3 fingers. Oh, I've got 7 more points. Like, oh, man, this guy is just brutal.
And then to see the reaction on the other guy's face, who is, you know, he's this big, like, mob boss or something like that. Mm-hmm. And to watch him go, was amazing. It was amazing.
And special effects in here were really well done. The makeup effects, as we've mentioned before on Darkman, looked, I thought, fantastic. But we actually had quite a bit of computer graphics in here, didn't we, Andrew? For a film like this, it surprised me how much, you know, the holograms and that we had. Is that a little surprising, just how much effects like that we had in here?
I mean, it's just it's everything's in here, man. It's got all kinds of stuff. It's a really I hadn't seen it in a long, long time, and then of course I get the Blu-ray Scott was talking about, and I'm watching it going like, it's a real kitchen sink thing in terms of effects. And you know, that was kind of an exclusively 80s thing, cuz you're talking about 1990, just a couple of years away from the introduction of CG when they're starting to do that stuff. So it was still kind of in that awesome renaissance HUD. I think the effects were Tony Gardner's Alterian studio. I don't remember, but I know he was one of the heroes in Fangoria, to Fangoria readers, if you're old and were a geek back then for this stuff, which I think Scott would give me a knowing laugh, so that means that we would have been. But I there's a lot of scenes there where you can't exactly, I still, looking at it, wouldn't be able to tell you for sure what all was used, because, you know, there's a rear projection, green screen, all this stuff, and, you know, the close-up of the lighter and all that stuff, so it's like you know, really, Sam Raimi, anybody who was a fan of his movies, and we talked about this, was just knew him for being pretty gonzo with the camera. Mm-hmm. But the comic book, that comic book genre for him, you could tell is what he was born to really do. And I know he always talked about being a big fan of Three Stooges, but I know he was also a big Spider-Man guy. I know that was a big deal for him. So really, like, it's funny that he's a hero to horror guys, because he's just not a, you know what I mean? This is more his thing.
Yeah, those superheroes definitely seem to fit his style, and you know, and again, this was just when people. I think the Darkman struck at the right time too, because and it made a substantial amount, because you know, someone said, "Oh, we could do a superhero movie other than Superman. Look at Batman, and it's dark, and now we have this other one," and everybody was starting to get a little hungry for comic book films to the point now where we're obese on comic book films, but back then it was a thin market, and so I love this film, and getting to watch it again, I loved the humor. I mean, you get an action scene in here that's pretty serious, of him battling it out with Larry Drake, you know, Durant on the helicopter, and he's hanging and he's being swung around, and then we get this kind of comedic thing where he's being pulled through traffic.
It's hilarious, dude. It's a very Evil Dead moment.
It was a
among
that
many.
Oh god, that one scene. Which where was? Ted Raimi is, where Darkman has Ted Raimi's character poked up through the manhole. I love that scene. Oh my gosh. That's probably my favorite sequence through the whole movie. I'm sorry.
Well, it was shot well, too, because we opened it with – they started with him hanging Ted Raimi's character over this really deep tunnel, and he's holding them, and it's like, oh, man. And then he sticks his head out the – yeah. That was – and that was just right there. That was some signature Raimi, along with the montage of the floating things going past as he was working on – the skin, if you remember that scene where he's starting to try to improve the skin, and you get the Danny Elfman music, which really he was in that Nightbreed vein. You could tell it was in that period. He had very similar music going on, but you had all that you know, beakers flying by and just wild imagery in this that was all grainy. I mean, this is basically. They went to an independent horror guy, go, hey, here's millions of dollars, make your movie. And that's the feeling that I got with this as well. So we'll wrap it up on Darkman here. You know, it is an interesting film. If you're a Liam Neeson fan, you should check it out. If you're a Sam Raimi fan, you want to see the early sprouts of the superhero craze. And even then, it didn't quite take off yet, even after Batman and this. But the Inklings, and I can see a lot of influences in your comic book films nowadays from these early superhero films.
I did want to ask if I could. I wanted to ask Paul a question, if that's all right with everybody.
No, go ahead. By all means.
Because I know, Paul, you're a big fan of superhero movies and all that. I just wanted to get your opinion on Darkman. If a superhero movie was made in the style of that one in today's superhero landscape where everything seems to be slowly falling into a template and people are happy about this for them all to be look the same and be made the same and all linked together. Do you think the reviews of Darkman would be like, do you think people would reject it, hate it, or how do you think it would go over now?
I think it would depend. If it came out just right now, I'm pretty certain everyone will hate it because they'll say, oh, this is not cool. There's nothing original about it if it came out like now, but if it came out in the middle of the craze, I think everyone would be like loving it. And when it, obviously when it did come out, people didn't know about it. And then they respect it. Like I respect this movie a lot better now watching it as an adult than I did when I was watching it as a kid. So.
Sweet. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Paul. I was thinking like before, I just wanted to know what you thought before we moved on.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
thank you.
With Raimi's style, I can definitely see that it would not probably sit well with your average comic book film audience. Those of us who like Mad Max Fury Road, on the other hand, I would totally dig this now because we need, I think, a different superhero film because they are, as Andrew mentioned, seem to be falling into a template. By the way, just to let everybody know, rumor has it there's an Ant-Man film coming out. Yeah. I don't know if anyone's heard that.
I was thinking about mentioning that.
Yeah, but it's nice for a female character because you don't want Uncle Man, you know. Get more female. Oh, wait. It's like... Shit. You lose again.
I really want, like, after Ant-Man, and I'm hoping it becomes a big success so that movies after that will say from the film studio that brought you Ant-Man. Because I'm getting tired of them not mentioning it by itself. It's
I mean, even the movie posters have other
Avengers that are even not in the film.
What were you going to say, Don?
I was going to say, you know, they do have Ant-Man, and then they have the Man from U.N.C.L.E., so.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
It does go there, whether they want it to or not.
We need Darkwing Duck, the reboot. That's the terror that quacks in the night.
I actually wonder, like, if they did release something like this now, the Darkman, and, you know, Darkman, for me, actually kind of confirmed something that I said about Batman the year before. When Batman came out, I said if that was an original character and there was no Batman before, if that movie would have been R. Mm, and yeah. I think Darkman almost kind of proved it because it was just a little more gore and it was R. I wonder, you know, if it did come out now, because I am starting to hear, even after you know, of Age of Ultron.
PG-13 now, though, dude? Do you only think it'd be PG-13 now? Army of Darkness would definitely be PG-13.
Army of Darkness, yeah, definitely. Darkman, probably, as long as they eased up on the language.
Mm, yeah,
because you can show somebody get their face ripped off, but you know, once you actually someone say fuck, you know, then everybody like screams and runs for cover.
I thought it was a titty that they run for cover.
Yeah, they'll that too. It's coming to get you, just like the Woody Allen movie.
Right in my eyes.
Just like in the Woody Allen movie, man.
Yes, exactly.
What were you going to say, Scott?
I was going to say that, you know, I wonder, you know, I have a feeling that if it came out now, it would do about the same business it did in 1990, which was that it did well. I mean, it didn't light the box office on fire, but it did well, and people still talked about it because I think back then, we had kind of a mini boom of comic book things. You know, Dick Tracy had come out that summer.
Return of Swamp. That's my favorite superhero movie.
Oh, it's awesome too. But I mean, but like, yeah, I love it. But yeah. I mean, but like, I think that though, because so many look the same right now, it would become the thing for the cool people to talk about. Like the people who loved it to like not say like, oh man, you saw that Age of Ultron? Man, let me tell you, Darkman. That's the one, man. You gotta see this shit when it comes on Netflix streaming. Oh man. You know, and that's what they're gonna do. I think I don't want to contradict anybody here. Like, that's just my own opinion of that's how I could kind of see that hat playing out today.
Sure.
You know, if it happened. And I think that when it was all said and done, it would do as well as it did the first time around, which was pretty good, not great. But you know what? People would still be talking about it 25 years in the future.
Yeah. Definitely. So, interesting comic book film. Hope you folks check it out.
And thank you for listening to part one of our 25th anniversary special number 5, Darkman and Total Recall. Hope you enjoyed our discussion about the Darkman. And check out part two, where we dive headfirst into a discussion of that classic 1990 sci-fi epic, Total Recall.